Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. Dr. Williams is the author of the acclaimed book, Shattered by the Darkness, Putting the Pieces Back Together After Child Abuse. Dr. Williams is on the senior leadership team at Baylor College of Medicine in Houston, Texas. And Dr. Williams travels the United States speaking and training professionals, parents, and victims about the importance of dealing with abuse and personal trauma head on and not being afraid to break the silence of your own personal pain. Feel free to call in to tonight's show at 888-627-6008 and speak with Dr. Williams and his guests live on air. And now, your host, Dr. Williams.
Good evening and welcome to Breaking the Silence, live from the most awesome city in the country, Houston, Texas. And look at this view behind me. I tell you what, it's just kind of cloudy right now. A little bit of mist is coming down, but it has been a beautiful day, been a warm day here in Houston. But it's just great to have you with us tonight. And I love just sitting here and watching the sun kind of fade out and turn it into night. And in some people's minds and in their own relationship with what they're going through, sometimes you feel like you're in these areas of dark clouds coming on top of you. And tonight we have a guest that is phenomenal to be able to help you through those dark times, those times that storms hit you, those times that you don't know where to turn. And I just can't wait to get to our guest tonight. If you want to get involved in the conversation this evening, we would love to have you do that. And there's two ways to do it. 888-627-6008. And the awesome people at BBS Radio will be so kind to patch you right into us. And they won't even fingerprint you or frisk you or anything. They're going to just say, hey, you want to talk to the guest, bring them on. And we don't pre-screen those. We'll let you come live. Or you can get on Facebook right now. I'm looking at it right here. My son Curtis in Seattle, Washington, in the U.S. Army is running that for us. And if there's any comments there, feel free to post them there or questions. And he will let us know that we have some people that want to have a question or a concern or a comment addressed. And we would love to do that. Next week, we have an author on, Donna Anderson. And she wrote a book called Senior Sociopaths. And it's about levels of trauma and abuse. And I love the title of the book. I'm going to read that this week. I promise, so I can be clear on what we're going to talk about next week. But the title is very interesting. Senior Sociopaths, Different Levels of Abuse and Trauma. So that's going to be next week's guest. But tonight, we have Dr. Jeanine McConaughey. And she is nationally known, and we'll talk about how we got hooked up with each other and met. Nationally known trauma-informed author. And right now, you know, I told you about a year ago, the word and the phrase trauma-informed will literally become a motto in our country and in the organizations. And it's starting to gain speed. It's starting to gain ground. And everybody's starting to understand the importance of trauma-informed. I want to let you know, the guest tonight probably knows more about that than all of us put together that we've had on the show for the last several months. She's going to be an expert on that. And she's also an advocate. And she lived with the effects of childhood sexual abuse from the time she was three until she entered therapy and began her healing journey. Listen to this. At 61. That's a long time. That's over 58 years. She went with that before she started seeking therapy. And we're going to talk about that tonight. Realizing healing was possible for survivors, she has now authored three books, and she's getting ready to have the fourth book come out, hopefully towards the end of the summer, describing the effects of childhood trauma and the path to healing. And Jeanine's passion is encouraged by other survivors of childhood trauma to seek healing. She is currently a distinguished visiting professor at Tabor College in the Master in Education, Neuroscience and Trauma. If you remember right, David Stevens was on here 2 weeks ago before the Easter break. I kind of took a week off. And he was in that program as well and was the director of that. And Janine is one of the professors in that. And she serves as the president of the board of directors for the Attachment and Trauma Network. And if I read the rest of her accolades and acknowledgments and honors, we wouldn't have time to talk to her. But I want to welcome you to the program tonight, Dr. Janine McConaughey. Can you hear me, Janine?
I certainly can.
Great. You doing well?
I'm great and excited to do this tonight. When I hear the accolades, I'm like, how did that happen? And because that's all part of the story. And I really am honored by everything that I have an opportunity to do. So it's great to be here tonight.
Well, it's great. And, you know, for the first time in the history of me doing this show, we already have a caller and they want to tip their hat to you. So I'm going to bring her right on, if you don't mind. And BBS, go ahead and bring her in. She's on line two. And we can hear her. We won't be able to see her, I don't think, but we should be able to hear her.
Hello?
Caller, can you hear me tonight?
I can hear you.
Hey, what's your name and where are you from?
My name is Rain. I'm from Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Rain from Tulsa, Oklahoma. I got a call from Tulsa, Oklahoma a while ago that I wasn't able to answer. And what's your question or comment for our guest tonight?
I just wanted to thank Dr. McConaughey for everything that she does for people who have been through trauma as early childhood, somebody with DID. She's been a great inspiration in my healing. She has suggested EMDR for me, and that's been a wonderful, wonderful thing. I used to call my system the peanut gallery. I used to hate them. And, you know, Stephanie, she's my newest alter. She just get loud and loud and louder and louder, and she found TikTok. Oh, my God, she found her voice. But we were listening, and I'm like, okay, she's not so mean. She's not so scary. And now that we have some sort of an internal dialogue, things are getting quiet. But the weird thing is, and what I don't understand, and I don't know if it's because I'm DID or if it's because I'm on the spectrum or just because I'm batshit crazy. But
Rain, I want to tell you that I'm so proud of all the work that you've done to heal, and I'm honored that you would drop in and say this, and thank you for doing that. They always kind. And you're right, healing is possible, and I'm really proud of the healing you've been doing. So hang on, and listen well. We're going to get talking now.
Yeah, hopefully this is going to be great.
And I just had to call in, so I got excited.
Hey, thank you, Rain, so much for calling us.
It's good
us
to tonight. Hear your voice, and I'll be thinking of you because I believe healing is possible for everyone. So thank you, Rain.
Absolutely. Thanks, Rain. Okay, listen in. Yeah, and Dr. McConaughey, tell me, first of all, why did it take you 58 years? It took me 35 plus, but what happened, or did something happen that caused you to go, wait, enough's enough? What happened?
Well, interestingly enough, most of what happened to me over my childhood, my unconscious mind was able to suppress it and allow me through dissociative structures to live my life and not, though I was being affected by it every single day, it enabled me to live my life, a very fulfilling life. I had a great life. I was a Bible college professor for 33 years, and I have students my students have been my best supporters. They're just I never shared anything about my trauma until I published Brave. And so it was a great shock to everyone to find out, oh my goodness, she was my professor. And we never knew that she was struggling. And so I think that, and the book that I have coming out next, Trauma in the Pews, and it's about healing trauma in the pews. And it's about the fact that in order to live the Christian life, a lot of times we don't feel like we have the freedom to tell our stories, to understand what's going on inside of us because of the trauma. And I always thought there was either something horribly wrong with me or I had a terrible spiritual problem that kept me in turmoil. So I didn't know there was hope. I really didn't know that what I was experiencing were the results of trauma. And because of that, I just figured I just need to live my life, and I've got to make myself get up every day and fight through and do what I know that I'm capable of doing. So it's kind of hard to understand, but I literally went to therapy because God said it's time to heal.
So all those years, 58, around that time, did you do like I did? You just wore one awesome mask and just pretended that everything was fine?
Yes.
So when yes, you got
I read,
home?
I read your book too. And there were places where I was like, oh, Greg, I get it. I totally get it. Because you just have to get up and go to school and you want to have a life. And you know, I mean, I went to college on a state scholarship. I was an academic I loved school. I loved teachers. I knew that I wanted to have a good life. And you do, you just put on the mask. And honestly, I didn't know who I was. So right. I read the room really well, figured out what everybody wanted me to be. And I just went and lived my life being that person.
Okay. So tell me, just between me and you, although everybody around the world is listening, but just
so kind of huddle up here.
Just whisper in this ear if you would. How did you handle those days when you walked in the door and it was the darkness starting to go in the skies behind, and these skies are awesome with the clouds starting to hit, and you go, okay, now I'm home, and the darkness hits. How did you handle that and get through that for so many years?
Well, and as Rain mentioned when she came in, I work with groups that to support those who have a dissociative identity disorder. And so that was, it was an amazing structure because it enabled me to take the darkness and just set it in a part of me that didn't go out and live my life.
Wow.
And so when I would, you're right, when the doors would close and I would be alone and the silence would settle in and all of that would begin to surface, it was actually very terrible. I called it the dark cloud, and I never understood it. I took antidepressants for years. I understand now that I had suicidal ideation. But then I would get up and go be a Bible college professor, right? Because that didn't have any place. That couldn't go there. That didn't belong there.
Okay, so you're this Bible professor. Did you ever think, hey, I'll share my darkness with somebody else? Or you thought, wait, there's no way I can because I'm a Bible professor.
There's a lot of pressure.
I can't share that.
That's a lot of pressure.
Oh,
so
yeah.
So a lot of it I didn't consciously remember. Okay. But what I, and actually that almost made it more difficult because then I couldn't understand what happened to me as a young adult. And so, And I did remember some of those things, but I just blamed myself for it because what was wrong with me? Why did I make those choices? I didn't really make choices. I was being driven by the trauma, And I learned to control myself. So I did a blog once on living the fruits of the spirit by control. And I talk about the fact that I did not live my faith out with the freedom. I lived it just by controlling myself. And it felt really spiritual, right? Yeah, I mean, that sounds spiritual, that you're controlling, you have self-control. But it wasn't. It was not. And I never had joy. My faith was, even though, yeah, it's complicated, isn't it?
It is. So you play the game.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I act like I have joy, peace, long suffering, and all of those. So you pretend, and the realness isn't there, even though you had the faith, no doubt. You couldn't be a Bible professor and all these without having a relationship with the Lord. But it is hard to explain, especially if somebody hasn't gone through that. But it's right. That, hey, this is how I'm supposed to act.
Right.
And so when you went through this and you started noticing a difference that obviously changed your life, when did the thought of, hey, wait, I got to put this in ink and on paper and bind it and get it out to as many people as I can? When did that come into mind?
So you've read the first book, Brave.
First two.
And I, most of that was written as part of my processing.
Yes.
So I would go to therapy. Then I would come, I retired. So what happened was I entered therapy my 40th year in education, for the first two or three sessions, I was fine. I need a little life coaching, right? And then we thinking that I was really, you know, okay. But I just had some childhood stuff, you know, mother issues maybe. And so we did some EMDR, and then everything started. It was like a perfect 3-point landing. Oh, I have more than one adult that I'm living as. And so, anyway, I finish out that year. And at the end of that year, I think, I didn't fit there. I needed to heal more. So I retired at the end of that year. So, and then I think the very hardest thing was that I knew I was a completely, I mean, I was still Janine. Yes. You know, everyone who knows Janine says, well, you're still Janine, right? Yes, I'm still Janine, but I was so different inside. And everything that I had forced myself to be, now I could just be. I mean, I was growing and healing, but I could just be. But I felt like I still had the mask on because nobody really knew who I was. I finished that whole last year and never told anyone at my college that I was in therapy. I mean, intensive, up to, you know, 3, 4, 5 sometimes sessions in a week just to keep me afloat. And I finished, I retired, and then I began to devote to healing. But I wrote Brave for a couple reasons. First of all, because I felt like there was so much that I needed the people around me in the churches and who had also suffered. I needed them to know they weren't alone, that they weren't abnormal, that yes. They weren't that if they had experienced childhood trauma, what they were experiencing was absolutely normal. There wasn't anything wrong with them. They didn't have a spiritual problem. They had the effects of trauma. So that was one reason. The other reason was because I knew the song Brave was really popular, and it felt like breaking out of a cage in that song. And I knew it unless I told people my story and told them what happened to me and told that I couldn't ever be me, I would never have the opportunity and the freedom, because I would still be hiding and thinking, what if someone found out? And so, I mean, that book, it's ridiculously transparent.
Yeah, I mean, it is. We're going to dig a little deeper into that book, and I have lots of questions, and then we'll try to get maybe just some of the talking points, but on the other side of this break. So if you want to get involved tonight, 888-627-6008. We promised the people when they call, we'll put them in, and Rain, we sure did that with you, and thank you for calling. But we'll be right back after this first commercial break with Dr. Jeanine McConaughey. So hang with us. We'll be right back. Finally coming very soon will be the release of my second book in the three-part trilogy, Overcoming the Darkness, The Roadmap to Hope. Now, this book will be an in-depth look at the many different facets and emotions that a person goes through when they're experiencing anxiety and trauma in their life, and they're simply searching for hope. And an exciting addition to this book will be a companion journal guide that will come along with it. Also, there's going to be something that I'm very excited about, the youth version of this book called When Dark Clouds Come, The Roadmap to Hope. And it's going to be an excellent tool and guide for teenagers dealing with stress in their lives. So stay tuned for the release date coming very, very soon for these exciting new resources. Now back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams on the BBS Radio Network. Welcome back. We have an awesome guest tonight, Dr. Jeanine McConaughey, author of three books, at least, and has another one getting ready to come out in a few months. And Doctor, how did we meet? It was at the one here at the last trauma-informed.
Yes, I came looking for you to introduce Houston? Myself. Yes, I did, because I had heard about you speak, because you spoke once before at the conference,
right,
and we didn't get a chance to meet. And so when I heard that you were coming back to the conference, that's what I did as president of the board. All I did was just, I walked, I don't know, 10 miles in 2 days, just because I just was going from room to room and trying to find the people. And there were some people that I missed that I didn't get back in time, but I managed to be in the room and introduce myself to you. And so, but it was through the Attachment and Trauma Network that we met. And so the Attachment and Trauma Network, let me just say real quick that as I was healing and I started putting pieces together, and I had one of my friends is executive director for Pathway to Hope in a group out of Kansas City. And she had mentioned, and then I Googled, and attachment and trauma came up. And that was how, and I was like, oh my goodness, it's not just trauma, it's attachment. Because if there's a good attachment relationship, if I had had a good attachment relationship with my mother, then she could have provided the nurturing, the care, the responsive, the attunement, the co-regulation, all of those important things for me after the abuse happened. But I fully think that she had her own abuse as a child, and she just couldn't. She could not be that mother for me. And so, you know, that I say that in one sentence, and that was like tons of therapy to get to that point, right?
Right.
Yeah. You know, we say things in these interviews and we're like, oh no, you need to understand that was a lot of therapy to get there.
Yeah. A lot of people do that. They'll say, actually, that was so easy for you. It's like, oh no, wait.
No, it's not that easy. And so I try to say that. So I actually dedicated Brave to her, because, and to all the mothers who need to heal so that they can know their own children. Wow. And so I feel like she died before I began therapy, but I feel like that she would be glad that I'm doing, because she didn't need to suffer her whole life either. And we could have had a relationship as a mother and daughter if we had understood that trauma could heal. Yeah. And so so that's kind of one of my missions, is to help young mothers. They think they don't have time to heal. They don't have time not to heal. And so I'm really adamant about that. But anyway, that's how I got connected with the Attachment and Trauma Network.
Well, it's a great conference. I recommend everybody to tap into that and come to that, or at least do the virtual, because it is wonderful.
Yes, yes.
One of the best that I've ever been to. Been to it twice.
Yes, I can't say enough about it. Of course, you know, I'm president of the board. I should feel that way, right? But even if I wasn't, even before, and I was so surprised when I was asked to join the board, and honored by that, because you were talking about all the things that I've done, and that's a result of healing. Because, I mean, yes, I had a PhD, but I never published my dissertation, which was a fabulous research study. But trauma kept me small, and I never followed through with that. And I really didn't know who I was born to be until I healed. And then all of a sudden I was like, oh my goodness, the whole world is like a candy store. There's people I want to meet. There's people I want to help. And so everything that I've done and teaching in the program for Tabor is just, it's just so exciting to realize that healing can just open up the doors.
Is it not an amazing feeling to be able to be where you're at and go, now I know exactly what I was put on this earth for?
Yes.
Isn't that an amazing feeling? And how many years did it take you? I know it took me a long time, but it's just like, wow, finally, after all these years, I know why I was created, and this is it. And I love that. It's just such a exuberant feeling.
Yes.
Finally, yeah.
Yeah, and to the people that I meet, that I Zoom with, that I meet at the I just amazing people, world changers. In fact, in my next book, I talk about how trauma can change the world, and I talk about the conferences and how the movement grew. You said trauma-informed is going to become a common word, and I've watched that whole progression, and I kind of share that in the next book, and I believe that being trauma-informed, sensitive, and responsive has enabled me to approach other people like Jesus. I feel like I have so much compassion for people. The judgment has all fallen away, and I understand dysregulation and all of the difficulties that come with this. And so it's just an exciting life that I really, really enjoy. I'm kind of tired right now. I made a list of everything I've done in the last 2 months, and this is kind of the last thing before I take a break.
And then you're going to take a nap.
And you got in right under the wire. I just want to tell you that.
Well, that's great. Okay, I'm going to step through a door that you just cracked open, if I may. You said trauma-informed like Jesus.
Yes.
Tell me, because I believe that, tell me how you perceive that everything that he did when he walked through this his life on earth, he was obviously trauma-informed. What's that mean to you?
Okay. So this is kind of interesting because I'm talking about ATN and we're not a faith-based organization. Right.
I realize that.
It doesn't mean that we can't live out our faith in the midst of that, but understanding trauma informed helped me to come back to my faith and understand Jesus truly was trauma informed, because he never led with repentance. He knew people's stories. He saw them as a person. He interacted with them as a person. He co-regulated with them. He knew the body. If you study polyvagal theory and the parasympathetic and sympathetic nervous system, and you understand the need for co-regulation and the need for a calming presence, Jesus was that calming presence that co-regulated other people and enabled them to accept the healing and to and then he said, now that you've met Jesus, go live your life differently. Live your life differently. And it wasn't a, you know, you need to control your life better. No, it was a go live in the freedom that you've been with Jesus. And so I think that everything, he's the most co-regulated person. I mean, the most self-regulated person. I mean, Peter lops off the ear and he just goes, okay, I'll just put it back on.
Yeah.
You know, just like, we don't need to do that. We can, let's just repair the ear. And so I don't know. I read the story very differently now. I read, in fact, I'm working on a project, if I can get to it, where I talk about that. I talk about the interactions and how they really are trauma informed, because Jesus understood. He didn't just look at him and say, what's wrong with you? He understood what had happened to them that had brought them to that moment.
He took the time to look at them and go behind the mask just by being there and caring. And if they all had masks on, obviously, but his care just melted the mask because it was genuine.
Yeah. Just melted it. And that, I want to say that I also want to give great gratitude to the amazing therapist I had who literally melted my mask. Just the relational trust that she worked hard to build with me. And I have trust issues.
Oh, I do too.
I have
is there anybody that doesn't? I don't think there is.
There isn't. I mean, when I see it pop up, I'm like, oh, there it is again. That's a trust issue. But that she was so patient with me and worked through that. I mean, I had attachment wounding. I had trust issues. I had abandonment. Everything. I've read your story. You get it, you know. So, yeah.
With the new book, we're not with the new book, the first book, Brave. You mentioned why you wrote it and how important it was in your journey. Can I be so rude to ask, where'd the bicycle come from? Why the bicycle? I love the cover.
So nine, the child part of me, nine, is always on a bicycle. And when I learned to ride a bicycle at nine, I had freedom and it was everything to me. And it was, my bicycle was my best friend. And I wanted all my books to have a symbol, and they do, the bicycle, the chair, and the typewriter. And, yeah. And the funny part is, so my sister-in-law, who is a graphic artist, years and years in the profession, and she gifts me with my book covers. They're beautiful. And that was not a blue bicycle. She went in and photoshopped that bicycle and turned it blue. And I'm just like, I said, I really need a blue bicycle. And she went off and did that. And it took her a long time. But anyway, that's where the blue bicycle. And the really fun part about that, this is part of my story, is that people identify me with the blue bicycle now. And so I, just yesterday, I got a message with a picture of a blue bicycle. People just send me pictures. There's a place on my website where I'm in process of collecting all my pictures of blue bicycles, but it means healing. It's my symbol of healing. And when I was sitting on my therapist's couch one day, and I don't remember if I put that in the book or not, but I said, I don't have a future. I mean, I'd given up my career. We were living in our RV at the time, which was a wonderful place to heal, like the foot of the Garden of the Gods. And, you know, so it wasn't bad, but it was because I couldn't function. And so, and it was a great adventure. But I said, I don't have any future. And she said to me, Janine, You do have a future, but you just can't see it right now, but I'm going to hold it for you until you get there.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah. Good. And there was another day where I said, if I can help one person, if I can help just one person, this will be worth it. And as I sat with this huge pile of Kleenex next to me, because it had been a really rough session, and it's gone way beyond my imagination. And so, and I just want to give hope that it's hard work. I don't ever want to tell someone that it's not hard work to heal. But it's possible. It's absolutely possible.
It's worth every step of it.
It is. Yeah. It is. I mean, look at us here. Look at us. Our stories do not dictate that we would be sitting here talking to each other, right?
No way.
Our stories dictate that our lives would not be here. And I think that that's possible, but people have to know. People have to know that it is possible. I don't know how many people that I've gotten to begin therapy. I mean, just they're everywhere. You know, one of my friends called Brave a people mover because it moved people to start therapy.
Which is awesome.
Yeah. So
when I read both of these books, Brave and Brave Childhood, I immediately, it didn't take very long to notice your fascination with Alice in Wonderland. Tell me how that all plays into this. Because it's like, I'm not that familiar with Alice in Wonderland, but obviously, I mean, you were really heavy into it and really relate to it. Where did that come from in this walk?
So, the ones who are just listening can't see me grinning while you're saying that. I understand now that the literature of my childhood was such an important part of how I survived as a child. And that I wove fantasies just like I do in the books. And that's one reason I did that in the books is I wanted to show how in reading a book, a child or an adult is able to take that and weave it into reframing or working through problems or a way to have hope. And so I ended out, it was a gift to me actually, but the very first class that I taught at the college level was children's literature. And I taught children's literature for 33 years. And if any of my students are listening, they'll know that I'd come with big stacks of books and I realize now that was a way, it was really a gift to me to continue to healing by continuing to read children's literature. Right. All three. And so I feel like we've so focused on teaching children how to read and all of the skills necessary for that we've forgotten that children just need literature. They need to be read aloud to. They need to be allowed time to read. They need to be. I remember when I got to college and all of a sudden we started dissecting the book, or even high school, dissecting the books and what did the author say? And it just took all the joy out of it for me because I had my own interpretation of it. Right.
And how it interwove with you. Yeah.
Right. So that's where all that comes from. That's the story of that. So in the third book, it's Dorothy. It's the Wizard of Oz.
Okay.
And if you look at the cover, it's the yellow brick road. And my path to healing was my writing. And so the yellow typewriter signifies my path to healing. But the yellow brick road winds up and ends out in the Emerald City, which is Seattle. And that's where I ended up living, was in the Seattle area. So my healing journey brought me to Seattle, and it's Dorothy all through the book instead of Alice.
You know, I don't know if you've seen the movie yet, Judy, about Judy Garland. And it's a great movie. Just came out a couple of years ago. Renee.
And why haven't I seen that? Oh, I know. I keep thinking. I
have a whole
chapter
in my new book that I talk about the last scene in the movie where Judy Garland is saying she's getting ready to get kicked out of London because she messed up and they're not going to let her sing there no more. And the last time she sings Somewhere Over the Rainbow, she prefaces with, you know, this isn't about a destination. It's about the journey to hope. And when I saw the movie, I went, whoa. I paused it and I pulled out my legal pad and I started writing down, this is life changing. And then she went into about what this hope was for her as a little girl, and obviously being abused and traumatized and then going through her life. And I never see anything about Somewhere Over the Rainbow or The Wizard of Oz, anything the same, because it's not about the destination. It's about the journey to get to hope. And I thought that was beautiful.
Right, right. And I remember I come up to visit my kids moved up here and then we moved up here, and I was on the Puget Sound out on one of the tour boats, and the announcer said, at night the lights come on and that's why they call it the Emerald City. And I all of a sudden I went, Oh my word. This is where I was supposed to. And so that there's so many connections, and I'm always looking for them. I mean, people are like, you have so many things happen like that. And I'm like, but that's because I look for them all the time. They're right there. I just love to look for them and see them. So yeah.
Fantastic. I tell you what, we're going to take our final break. This hour is going by so fast before we come back into our last segment. I want to talk about ACEs when we get back from our break. Adverse childhood experiences, your take on that, how it affected you, and what people can do if they're going through it right now. We always like to end this last segment with giving people hope and encouragement to keep on keeping on, like you have done hundreds, if not thousands, in your books and in your speaking around the country. So 888-627-6008. We'll be right back with the last segment after this short commercial break. Hang with us.
From HCI Publishing, that brought you the international bestsellers, A Child Called It, and the Chicken Soup for the Soul series, comes the latest book by Dr. Gregory Williams, Shattered by the Darkness. This book describes the horrific abuse that Dr. Williams suffered at the hands of his father for over 12 years, and the damaging effect of keeping everything silent about that abuse for 30 years. If you're looking for that book that you can't put down, then pick up a copy of Shattered by the Darkness by Dr. Gregory Williams at all Barnes & Noble stores, Amazon, and Books A Million. Now, back to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams.
Welcome back. And I promise you, Doctor, after this segment, you can go take a nap and rest after all of this journey you've been on for the last several months. We just had a comment. April Dean, I don't know if that name rings a bell. Yes. She wanted to thank you because she loved your children's literature classes. So she put that on Facebook for the world to see. And I just want to make sure you heard that from her.
Hello, April. I love you. Yes, April's one of my former students and one of the many who sat in my children's literature classes.
Yeah. That's great. What does this, because I think before Trauma Informed, there was this ACEs word being thrown out that not very many people had known. Matter of fact, my first presentation to Baylor College of Medicine doctors, how many people ever heard of ACEs? And I think 3 out of 100 went like, whoa. But now it's a lot more. What does adverse childhood experiences mean to you, and how does it affect people at our age now And I just want to hear your take on that.
Well, it's kind of interesting. I remember the first time that someone asked me, do you know about ACEs? And I went, ACEs? You know? And so we've all been on that journey, and we all have to have a starting point. And so after I was asked that question, of course, you know, that was what, 5 years, 6 years? I don't even know. And so I immediately went in research, and I was like, oh my goodness, this explains, this just doesn't explain me, it explains all those who struggle. And combine the ACEs work combined with the work of Gabor Mate on addiction. Oh, yeah. We have imprisoned, judged and not provided the resources for the most vulnerable people of our nation, because we did not understand that there wasn't anything wrong with them. Something horrible happened to them. So when I began, of course, I went and I took the ACEs survey, and you know, what your score is kind of, I mean, it was a great research study. It isn't the everything of the research study, because it doesn't talk about, well, how many times did this happen to you? Was it chronic, or was it one, you know, did it happen to you once as a child, and so forth? And so it doesn't encompass a lot of trauma that can happen to people. But what it did was it said, when this happens, then there's a greater chance for these things to occur in your adult life. And that was the key. And it wasn't just it was physical, it was health-wise, it was behavioral health, it was, which I don't even like the term behavioral health, because it's not, anyway, but that's what we call it. Okay, so all of those kinds of things. But I think that the thing that really struck me was I was preparing for a workshop or seminar, and I started looking at the charts. And if you go to ACEs Too High and you go to their page, you can see all of the charts that deal with suicide, smoking, alcoholism, a lot of the behavior things, and how they go, Here's someone with one ACE. Well, their chance of having all this happen in their life is very, very small. But if you get up to five, which is where I am, then that's exponential. And all of a sudden I went, I never understood my suicide attempt, because I'm someone who wants to live. Why did I end up trying to drive that car off the cliff? And I don't even know when I wrote Brave that I fully comprehended that it was a result of my trauma, of the internal turmoil and distress that I was living with. And so then I started looking at it, and I thought, oh, well, I haven't done all these things. You know, I wasn't an alcoholic. I didn't smoke. And partially because the church called them sin. And then that was when I went, oh my goodness, we have taken the way that people cope with the turmoil, the ways that they try to soothe themselves, which are damaging. I mean, and no one would disagree with that, but they were all they had. And we have called them sin and told them that it is a moral failure and a spiritual problem. And of course, Bessel van der Kolk talks about that. It's not a moral failure. It is a result of the trauma, the effects of the trauma. So I think that was a huge, the ACEs was a huge turning point in what I do as far as my work with faith-based organizations, which is a part of what I do. And because I realized how the very people who need us to show them unconditional love to, or unconditional care or regard, get judged because we believe that their behaviors are quote unquote sinful. Are they healthy? No, they're not healthy, but
right. Yeah. Doctor, we're on the last lap before we have to go.
Yeah. It goes fast.
It does go fast. This has been awesome. Thank you. I want to just step back and let you offer hope to people. What they need to do if they're finding themselves in the role that you found yourself in years ago before you went to therapy, what would you encourage people to do, how to handle that, next steps, and this, any other encouraging words of wisdom? And then before you close out, I would like for, I'm going to ask you for contact information so people can find you, because you have a lot of different sites that they can find you on. But offer some hope right now, and I'll just let you take it and run with it. Next couple minutes.
I think about all of the years that I spent in despair and hating myself for whatever was wrong with me. And I think that one of the most difficult things that parts of healing is to begin to be like, oh, I was a little girl. It wasn't my fault. How all of the results of this and what it led to as a young adult, it was not my fault. And I think that so many people are so afraid to open that up. So afraid that because sometimes people will say, well, I have a demon inside of me, you know, and who I found out the demon was this little 3-year-old girl who was screaming and screaming because she didn't have anyone to console her, and those big emotions that I had no way to deal with. And so I think what I would say is there's hope. There's hope for healing that little child inside of us that was so hurt. And we're an example of the joy that comes when that happens.
Yeah.
And that joy is available, but it takes work. And you have to be willing to be brave.
And don't you have to move? You have to move. You have to get up and make a step. And a lot of people think, okay, can I just give you a call and we'll talk for a couple hours and be all right? No.
No.
You have to make the move to make the call or to take the step or get to therapy. But it is a process. As long as you keep moving,
right,
towards that destination.
And I have a boundary, because I say, I'm always glad to talk to you and encourage you, but I'm going to tell you to go to therapy. And if you do, then I'll continue to encourage you. But yeah. I can't be your support. I can't. You have to make the move. You have to be willing to do what you need to do in order to access the help. Yes, absolutely.
If people want to get in touch with you and just to get your books, to reach out and see what you have going on and where, what conferences you're speaking at, things of that order, what's the best way to find you online and in social media?
I my website is Janine, Janyne, difficult name, .org. And I link to everything there. I need to catch up. I know I've got some broken links and stuff, and I'm getting ready to settle down and get all that fixed. But it has my books, it has podcasts, it has resources, it has some of my presentations that I've done. It's chock full of resources there. And so also the Attachment and Trauma Network, we have a fabulous website and resources through that. At my website, I actually have a page that says Become Trauma Informed, and I take you through 5 steps and say, do this, do this, do this, do this. And not that you're going to be totally trauma informed at the end of that, but I try to provide ways that people can begin the work of understanding, because understanding yourself is everything, just everything. And so and if you Google my name, sometimes I do that. I'm like, I don't know how this happened, but I can Google my name and I disappear. I don't even know how that happened. It's kind of fun. So that's another way. Just Google my name and you'll find me.
So. Fantastic. Well, I can't tell you how great it was for you to spend some time this evening with me and the listeners and just sharing your wisdom and your journey. And I applaud you for your bravery and your book's brave. And I would highly recommend, I can't wait until the fourth one comes out. That's really, I'm really interested in leaning into that. But you can get them on your website. You can also get them on Amazon. And every now and then, Amazon has a sale. I think last week mine went on sale for half price. I didn't know anything about it, but I didn't know how they do it. But get it however you can get it and get your hands on it. And I appreciate you spending some time with us tonight. Thank you so much.
I love this. Thank you for inviting me. Thank you.
When the next book comes out right before it gets released, I'd love to have you back on.
So okay. We'll do this again because that's an interesting one. I'll be glad to talk.
Really good. And hopefully we'll be at the next conference or one of the ones coming up, and I'll get to visit with you a little bit there too.
Great.
Thank you so much, Doctor. Thank you for being with us tonight.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
We like to close each program out each and every week with letting people know that no matter what, no matter how many years, and Janine was a perfect example of this, no matter how many years it's been, don't give up. Don't just close the book and say, hey, everything's over. You can always be tough. Hang in there. And as Janine's book said, be brave and search for hope, because hope is there. It is in existence. I promise you that. Join us next week when we have Donna Anderson on, and she'll be talking about senior psychopaths. And that's going to be an interesting conversation right here. And don't miss the next edition of Breaking the Silence, live from Houston, Texas. God bless. Have an awesome, awesome week. Good night.
Thank you for listening to Breaking the Silence with Dr. Gregory Williams. To contact Dr. Williams, dial 832-396-6525 or email him at shatteredbythedarkness@gmail.com. And don't forget to join us each Sunday night at 8 p.m. Central Time, 6 p.m. Pacific on BBS Radio Station 1 for the next episode of Breaking the Silence.